think I might have slightly misled Bevan because I told him what the title of my sermon was going to be before I wrote it. These things have a way of evolving. May the words of my mouth and the meditation of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, Lord our God. I'm not sure who knows me or about my journey, so I'll just sketch it out since I am married to Greg. I have been married to him for a very long time, but there are other things about me that maybe you don't know. I just see so many lovely people from my past. So this bit's for you. I was a member of Teen Crusaders Fusion in the 70s, a Jesus Flower People person. This is giving some feedback on the... I'll pull it a bit closer. Oh, that's better. Yeah. Thanks. That's great. And after that, I was looking for a community who welcomed people while I was working for Fusion. And the people who I was working with needed to be in a particular welcoming congregation. So the local Uniting Church was that. And so I joined the Uniting Church, and the Uniting Church has been my faith home since then. Of course, it was and is highly flawed, like all human institutions, but it is family for me. One of the big reasons to stay and to work in the Uniting Church was because of its commitment to social justice. It has been my area of work and commitment for about the past 50 years, the last 20 being the leader of that area of ministry for the West Australian Uniting Church. I now have a small business assisting NGOs and churches in the area of governance and conflict resolution. I'm also a current and founding member of CARAD, the Refugee Welfare Service. I'm the patron for Case for Refugees, now called the Humanitarian Group, the legal service which was founded to provide community legal service to refugees who were banned from any other legal service at the time. I serve on the Bringing Them Home Board, working for justice for the stolen generations, and I'm a co-convener of the Faith Workers Alliance and a trustee of Unions WA. So it is with weary resignation that I come to Habakkuk this week. Easy to see where he is writing from in this world of injustice and inequality. Strange to think it was being written nearly 3,000 years ago. Could have been this week. It is the cry of the righteous to the God of righteousness. I resonate with the writer. I'm sure many of you do too. How long? Why the injustice? Why the tyranny, outrages and violence? Why do the unjust prevail? It's easy to see the parallels, the injustice of Australia's refugee policy, where 60 people are locked up for no crime at all in a jail in Port Moresby. People are currently detained on Nauru and previously on Manus Island in PNG. And others languishing in Australia, facing the extended uncertainty of temporary visa provisions and the dreadful, deadeningly slow processing when they have just sought asylum, succour and support from Australia. And again this week, when there is another small glimmer of hope in Indigenous affairs, the disregard and disrespect of Australia's First People, of their dreams and aspirations, is devastating in its breadth and audacity. and the arrogant response to the climate emergency. These things are just a few of the injustices that are obvious. Why is God silent? The story of Zacchaeus is well known to us all. What do you reckon? Everyone know it? Yeah. I was wondering if it was as well known as The Loaded Dog by Henry Lawson or Mulga Bill's Bicycle. Those of us who went to school before social media, we learnt poems and stuff like that. And the poems that were most successful in primary school were always the most amusing, things that had slightly naughty pieces in them and things that maybe our younger uncles and fathers might have been involved in the past. They capture our imaginations. Luke's Zacchaeus is a strange story full of details that have delighted storytellers over the generations. The Sunday school classes who giggled over the song, Zacchaeus was a wee little man. It was a very wicked thing to say wee when I was a child. It was hilarious to 7 and 8 year olds, and our two grandchildren at this age are currently right into the hilarity of such things. Anyway, Zacchaeus is memorable to us. I wonder if I can have the first painting up on there. Joel Whitehead is a contemporary artist who painted this colourful piece. Can you see through my head? It's very brightly coloured. When you see it on the in a darker space, you can see how beautifully coloured it is. I wonder what you notice about this art. What do you notice about this piece of art? I stand back a bit. Yes. A holy person. The light is emanating from Jesus. Anything else? Yes, the people are all different. They're all looking up. Do you see what they're looking at? It's a bit disguised, isn't it? Especially in the dull part. This is the Zacchaeus there. Stuck up a tree. I love it for its colour and its movement. The people are all putting their hands up, so if you were standing behind them, would you be able to see? I guess Zacchaeus couldn't see, and when I look at this through my social justice eyes, I think about what's the structural injustice here, what's going on? Why was Zacchaeus like this? Why did he need to be like this? Did he have a disability? Was he actually initially discriminated against? Did he have a scoliosis? You know, I think about all these things because I have a nursing background as well. So I think, well, what was the matter with him? He doesn't look remarkable in this depiction. Did he become estranged from society by the way he was treated? Certainly by his own admission, he was a liar and a cheat. Nevertheless, salvation is available beyond all the understanding of wrong and sin. Perhaps he was as much a victim of society's shunning and a lack of acceptance as a perpetrator of injustice himself. Structural injustice, the disenfranchisement, the powers and principalities that the biblical narrative refers to were rife in the beginning of the common era. Poor, disabled or single female, all were vulnerable, despite the strictures and admonishments of the Torah encouraging another response. Do you think that there's an equivalent of Zacchaeus today? I thought of a few. You can call out any if you like. I thought maybe the Minister for Social Security, because of the robo-debt driving people to despair, the billionaires who pay no tax, people who demand different and unjust treatment of Aboriginal people seeking to deny them title to their own land, Woolworths, who underpaid their staff significantly over 3 years. Oops, mistake. The vulture capitalists who raid productive companies to strip the assets and sack the workers, selling the companies for a profit with no consideration of the social and human consequences. What Jesus, looking to the person desperate to catch a glimpse of him, sees a person loved by God. Zacchaeus, confronted by goodness and love, realised his behaviour was destructive and unfair and undertook to give back 4 times what he stole. Perhaps the first time restorative justice is seen in practice. It doesn't seem that he needed to have his wrongdoing explained to him. Perhaps like, what's the name of Potteroo? Miss Lily is the last Potteroo. Perhaps like the last Potteroo, realised, felt guilty, wanted to repair the injustice that she had done. He saw the unjust ways that he treated people. I had fun this week speculating on what it would look like for Woolworths to give back 4 times what they stole. I was thinking, what about those people that they took $50,000 from over 3 years? Now that might be reparations. I was wondering about reparations. What would it be like for the many people falsely accused of owing the government money under the robo-debt fiasco to be paid back 4 times what they had taken? It might just have given back some life to some of those people. In this context, Brandon Wrench's comment caught my eye. God has little tolerance for religious ritual that is a cover for social injustice. Saying sorry is a weak response. This is guilt, not a simple mistake. To make restitution, to truly repent, includes changed behaviour, reparations, healing and reconciliation. I have an interest in art as we think about religious themes, and it's interesting to look at what the artists and authors are telling us. Have I got another slide? There's another slide of an icon. It's a contemporary icon for the Greek Orthodox Church in the US. Different style of art. Has anyone done any work on icons here? Seems a bit of an unusual thing for a community church. While we're finding it, icons are written. They're telling a story. The symbols that they use are highly codified, or they were highly codified, and so that they are telling a story in a particular way with particular meanings. Oh, cool. So, Zacchaeus, first of all, let me ask you, what do you think this icon has written? So there's a zoom in. on this particular instance. There is the representation of a crowd. So the city, coming into the city of Jericho, is the representation. This was in the context of coming into a city. So that's the that's a little code.
And there's a figure behind
Jesus. Yes, possibly the beloved disciple and Peter. So John and Peter there. So John concentrating, looking like he's looking straight at Zacchaeus. And Peter looking out at the crowd, looking to us, telling us that this is something that we need to be responding to. So Peter is looking out to you and to me in the icon. That's the representation to it. I wanted to know about the hands of Zacchaeus. So I was thinking about they might be about his openness. So hand down. So not pushing away. Hand down. As we sometimes pray, like this, open and exploring. One's up. And the other one like this, maybe accepting the blessing. So Jesus is offering a blessing to him, accepting the blessing. It's got a scroll. There's a scroll in Jesus' hand. What is it? It's the Word of God. So here is the Word of God, loving, seeing, welcoming. So, lovely symbolism. You can see how you can really get into looking at icons. Zacchaeus has seen the emptiness and destruction of riches. He's known something was missing from his life. He's isolated in the purdah of rejection of the whole community. There is no one more despised than a collaborator and a traitor. That's who he was. That's who he had become for whatever reason. In the icon, you can see his hands open and reaching out to someone he can trust, someone who is not condemning. There is hope. Just as in Habakkuk, we are exhorted not to despair. So in Habakkuk 2:3, it says, For still the vision awaits its appointed time. It hastens to the end. It will not lie. If it seems slow, wait for it. It will surely come. It will not delay. When the vision tarries, wait for God. And as the Jerusalem puts it, if it comes slowly, the Jerusalem Bible puts it, if it comes slowly, wait, for come it will without fail. And as Martin Luther King said in one of his historic speeches, the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. Both Habakkuk and Zacchaeus are stories of hope and justice. For Zacchaeus, it is a new start. For Habakkuk, it is for God's realm of justice to come. No matter how hard it seems now, it's a vision of hope for a people needing hope. The people of 3,000 years ago and for us now. Hold on to the vision, for the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. Amen. I'm very happy to talk with you about this. I like to do interactive things because I come once forever. I don't think I've ever preached here before, but usually when I'm preaching, in Western Australia at least, I'm preaching one time. So I always like to have an interaction with people. So I'm giving you time to think about what you want to think about. Yes.
I'm still on the icon, Rosemary. I'm still on the icon.
Yes, go for it.
I'm curious about the, is it a mountain behind the figure? So I'm curious about what that imagery is about.
So maybe the mountain is a hard road to climb. Maybe it's
Calvary.
It's the obstacles of life, the things that get in the way, the long journey to get to this point.
Or pointing towards Christ's death?
Maybe.
Jerusalem?
Certainly, Christ in Luke 19 is certainly on his way to his death. Going through Jericho is one of the towns on the way. Yeah. Mm. The words above their heads on the icon, Zacchaeus in Greek and Jesus on the other side, yes. I just had to check. Yes, it is Jesus. I had a look last night. Any more questions?
I struggle with being gracious to people who are perpetrators of injustice. And I'm interested in the story of Zacchaeus about how nearly everyone else around is likely to not show any grace towards Zacchaeus except for Jesus. And how do the disciples reconcile that? How do they change what's going on? Because for me, that is probably more of a pertinent question rather than going, okay, we need to show grace to people. You know, I get that, but how do I swallow that and actually do it?
I don't think we've had a very good record in the church of getting this right, have we? Because sometimes we've shown grace to people who needed not only grace but justice in the legal sense of the word. So I noticed someone was working with children's checks there. So for those very reasons, there's a cautionary tale about how we extend grace. But some of the words around the people in the crowd that I've read this last time preparing for today is like sharp elbows. So there were sharp elbows being put as barriers to Zacchaeus getting to God. And it is really, I mean, I said it in a bit of a joking way, I suppose, but it is really a challenge to us who would be Zacchaeus in our time? How will we extend grace? And is it for us to extend grace or is it for God to extend grace to people?
Seems to me that in the story of Zacchaeus, he's already showing an openness. He's already showing that he wants to be different, and for me, that makes it infinitely easier to show grace. Do you see that as well, that he's showing openness?
Yes, I think that's the point of the icon, really, that he is actually got that hand showing openness to Jesus. And by his very actions, I suppose, climbing up the tree, thinking that perhaps there is some hope for him, even though he's committed all of these crimes. Mm.
And so that kind of leaves a big question for me as to if and how to show grace to people who present themselves as being perfectly entitled and unwilling to change. I don't have an answer, it's just a comment.
So that probably is a good thing for us to think about.
I think the thing that I noticed this time was that it's about the interaction between Zacchaeus and Jesus and it's got nothing to do with the system that Zacchaeus is embedded in. Like, it's got nothing to... Jesus is not saying, well, this thing that you've been doing is part of a systemic problem that we all need to work towards to change. It's actually Jesus saying, I meet you and I see you and I see you wanting to see me.
And perhaps because I see you, you are now... And you are now reflecting on how you are seen by Jesus, that is also something that's impelling Jesus to leave it there. So
very interesting. one thing was about a vision. I remember something that sustained me a lot at a time of change, and that was something I read from some old theologian that said you can't attain to a vision, you can only live in the experience of it until it comes about, or in the hope of it. Yeah, so you live with it in your mind, but you've got no control over when it's going to come about.
Yeah, you're living to the hope of the hope of the vision being fulfilled, and I suppose that's how we are as Christians. We live now in a time where we see some inbreaking of the realm of God on earth.
Yeah.
But it will be fully known to us into the future.
And Zacchaeus, to me, I've done a lot of stuff to do with why do we have oppression and class stuff, and how does that affect us? And like, say, owning class, powerful people, the hurtful way they are raised is to destroy their feelings and to put the estate and the kingdom and the, you know, the assets first, and to the point where they can send men to their death in war and so on.
Mm.
You know, in other words, to destroy their feelings to be part of the oppressive system. But that gets to people, and they'll be like Zacchaeus, that they've got to know that they're going to be forgiven before they ask for it. Because to just confess up and say, oh, I'm going to stop now, you can just be branded as a hopeless person for the rest of your life, as we do to some forms of criminals, because we don't offer healing and forgiveness as the first point. They know that they'll be vilified if they express regret. Mm. Zacchaeus knew this was his chance.
Yes, I suppose this is some of the theory behind the practice of restorative justice, which I've been involved a bit with prisoners and some people who've perpetrated horrendous crimes. And the prison chaplains who work in our state prison systems are a sainted class by themselves for being those kinds of people, for listening to those horrendous violations of other human beings and being there as a Christ presence with them.
So the revolution of class staff now is to not to wheel out the guillotines, but to invite the isolated oppressive people back to the playground to play with us.
And I think one of the things that is helpfully offered by the restorative justice approach is that people actually listen in person to how their actions have affected another person face to face. And that's an amazingly confronting thing to do, to be involved in, and not everybody sees anything wrong with it. Not everyone can go through the pain of trying to reconcile that. So it's an interesting process. Sorry.
One of the things that bothers me most about our society is what some people call tribalism. But the view that our gang have got it right, and that gang over there have got it totally wrong, and it comes down from the politicians, but it's getting worse and worse, and I think we have to live under that rule, you don't judge others. You know, you can argue a point, but you're not saying that somebody who believes what I don't believe is bad or stupid or those kind of things. We as Christians have to move right away from that kind of language. But I'm seeing it from Christians more and more.
It's a very challenging thing, the tribalism of politics and the tribalism of Christianity, and which we're seeing, you know, walked out for us in the newspapers and on the news every night. It's very, very confronting.
I just want to, where the comment from Elise, the personal response.
Yes.
To then change. Mm. It took me to Nicodemus.
Yes.
And it seems to me here it's it's dealing with the social or the economic injustice.
Mm.
I think Nicodemus is an example where Jesus, this is really helpful, Jesus was, you know, really got stuck into the religious leaders as a class. But you might say Nicodemus is another example of being the person being seen and invited to respond.
Yes.
And thinking, that's the lesson for me, of thinking, and you know, I'm doing deep coaching work with people in business. And there's a lot about, so there's the notion of what I do about the class of people, but where do I look for the Spirit of God at work in the lives of individuals?
Mm.
That then invites the response.
Mm.
That's where you've taken me.
A lot of the commentators make the link between Nicodemus and Zacchaeus as being maybe a further exploration of the same issues and stories that help us to confront both the individual and systemic societal challenges. Yeah. Oh, one more question. Maybe I'm a bit worried about how long this is going, but are we all right? Okay.
I just want to pick up on what Peter said about the tribalism, because I really struggle with the importance of being tolerant of other Christians' views, and at the same time, I really feel that a lot of the worst of injustices are perpetrated by Christians in the name of Christianity, and I'm seeing it very much in our government at the moment, even that we have a Prime Minister who is very open about the fact that he's a Christian, and yet he is leading the injustice against refugees and all sorts of situations, and I just don't know how to handle that.
Mm.
I just don't know what to do. I don't know how to be tolerant
of their intolerance,
and at the same time judge them as wrong.
Yes, it's supremely challenging, isn't it? I thought about Lunig this last fortnight, I think it's been, and I was thinking so often Lunig gets it exactly perfectly right. The social commentary that he's making is actually just so spot on. And then he did a cartoon that was, oh my goodness, and very judgmental and all of the stuff. Now, he does this every now and again. I've met him a few times, and he's quite intolerant of some particular things at times. Oh, maybe I'm intolerant of some things. Anyway, and yet the gift that he has been to our community, reflecting back to ourselves, is just one of those things you just can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. I'm not sure that I feel exactly that way about the leadership of our country claiming Christianity and acting. I don't think there is anything wrong with saying that acting unchristianly, acting unchristlike, being unchristlike in their actions might not be the case. But I remember talking to Kim Beazley when he was in the leader of the opposition at the time of the Tampa, and he said to go out and talk for justice on for the refugees on this boat that the Tampa picked up, so it would be martyrdom. And I said to him, but what about who we follow? And then, you know, the thing went on. Of course, Labor never opposed what was done. They gave in then and they always give in now on the same issues, because they think that the rest of the society is with them in this tribalism. It's us against them. We can only hold on to the ground that we have if we are seen to be part of the us against the other, the them. And that's a challenge. And it always, when you're embedded in this stuff, it's just so difficult. When you see it and people say, well, you've got a Christian Prime Minister, what else do you churches people want? You know, well, actually, maybe we'd just like somebody who was moral and upright and had some insight or something like that. But, you know, who wasn't just concerned about winning the next election or gathering the tribes of us to themselves. So maybe the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. Thank you very much.
Last one.